listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roybern.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Daily Podcast. This is being recorded on Friday. Another great day for precious metals, and we have a great guest to talk with about it. A returning guest, he is Jared Dillion. He's a publisher of the Daily Dirt Nap, also the publisher of several books. He has a new book called No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life. Also, his second to last book, or second most recent book, I should say, Those Bastards, 69 Essays on Life, Creativity, and Meaning. And Jared, first question for you, those bastards, are you talking about the Federal Reserve or the federal government?
No, actually, I'm talking about neither. So that comes from a quote from Dick Fuld, obviously, who is CEO of Lehman. And the day of the bankruptcy, he came down to the trading floor and got on the hoot. And he said, we're going to get those bastards. And he was referring to the short sellers. He believed that the short sellers were the cause of the failure of Lehman Brothers, not anything that he did. Like, he did not take responsibility at all. So, you know, I've been waiting for the chance to use We're Going to Get Those Bastards in a book title or something like that for a long time. So the title of the book is Those Bastards.
That's great. And yeah, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life. Of course, this is a gold focused podcast, but it seems to me right now, if you're invested in precious metals, that at least your stress levels might be going down a little bit.
Yeah, the funny thing about markets is, you know, gold has really been consolidating for like 13 years, you know, from 2011 to 2024. And for a period of 13 years, a lot of people have said, well, I don't really see the reason to hold gold. It's underperforming stocks. It's, you know, why should I hold gold? And what I suspected all along was that when it would break out, it would break out very quickly and there would not be a lot of time to act, you know? So here we are about 15 or 20% higher from the level it broke out at. And, you know, people are totally flat-footed. They're under, and the whole world is underinvested in gold. You know, I would say the average portfolio allocation is probably around 1 or 2% when it should be at least, 10%. So yeah, people are massively underinvested and that's, and they're going to catch up. So.
Yeah. And, you know, people are arguing about, you know, what is causing this move? Why is gold going up? I mean, Bill Fleckenstein, I interviewed several weeks ago, and he said, these are always the best moves when nobody can pinpoint an exact reason why something is having a move. What are your thoughts on what is causing this move? Why people are buying gold now? Although, I mean, you did mention the technicals, and I mean, I've talked about the big cup and handle pattern and that beautiful breakout, but you know, that aside from that, what are you thinking about that could be driving gold?
Well, you know, I had a tweet thread just yesterday about what I think is the cause for this. So, you know, I saw a chart on Twitter which showed interest expense over the last 5 or 10 years. And as of a couple of years ago, interest expense was about $300 billion and it skyrocketed higher and now it's about $1.1 trillion. And, you know, at the rate that we're issuing debt, and if interest rates go up 1 or 2 more percent, then it's checkmate. Like fiscally, like we're in checkmate, like there's nothing we can do. And then you start having discussions about, okay, tens are at 6 or 7% and mortgage rates are at 9 or 10%. And, you know, it's interest rates are higher because of debt issuance. And there's going to be political pressure on the Fed to cap the yield curve, kind of like they did in the 30s and 40s, which will require the unlimited printing of money to buy government bonds to cap yields. And that's called debt monetization. So really the way I look at gold is it's really just measuring the probability that someday we will end up in debt monetization. And one of the interesting things is that people have said, well, this move doesn't make any sense because interest rates are going up and gold is going up at the same time. Like, that's counterintuitive. Well, if you think about it in terms of if interest rates go up, it increases the probability of debt monetization, which is actually positive for gold. So I'll stop here.
Yeah, that's great. So is debt monetization, is that a form of yield curve control? Or do, when people say yield curve control, do they have the wrong term? I mean, how do you think about those terms?
Well, there's a bunch of terms. There's QE, there's yield curve control, and there's debt monetization. And a lot of it comes down to intent, right? So QE and yield curve control are really, you know, you're printing money in order to affect changes in monetary policy. You're trying to loosen monetary policy. Whereas debt monetization, the intent is different. The intent is to cap interest rates because they are too high, right? And that's really the difference. And, you know, there's been examples of debt monetization in history, which we know about, which are Weimar Germany and Zimbabwe and also Argentina, which they're trying to reverse right now. So we know what happens when you get into debt monetization. There's historical examples of this.
How close do you think we are to that point where we have to start printing money to suppress bond yields? Is that something we could see this year, or are we a couple years away?
I think it's going to happen in the next presidential term, regardless of who's president. I mean, you know, right now, I think if the election were held today, Trump would be president. Trump is, he's not a small government Republican. I don't think he would necessarily expand government, but he's not a small government Republican. I think we would get there faster if Biden were reelected. I think we would get there much faster. You know, you're talking about a $7 trillion budget where we have $4.5 or $5 trillion in revenues. I can see that expanding a great deal under him. But the short answer is, I think it's going to happen before 2028. So.
Okay. Do you have any price targets for gold over the next year or two? I mean, do you think about that, or are you just the type of investor or trader who sees, well, this could be a huge move, it's going up, that's all I'm going to worry about for now?
Well, I, you know, before the breakout, I said, if it breaks out, I think we're going to have a pretty straight shot up to 2,500. And I keep an eye on the charts. You know, there are some, you know, what's funny is I get a lot of emails from people saying, asking me, when do we sell gold? When do we sell gold? When do we sell gold? When do we take profits? And I'm like, man, it is way too early to be thinking about that. You know, when if by the way, if you look at a chart of gold and a chart of cocoa, if you line them up, kind of looks the same. Like, we are in the early stages of this breakout. Not to say that gold is going to go to 9,000 within a couple of months, but we are in the very early stages of this breakout. It's far too early to be thinking about taking profits.
Yeah, and silver too. I mean, because cocoa, that was a 45-year base. I mean, that's, in a longer term sense, I mean, I've been telling people that this is what happens when you break a really long base in commodities. And
yep.
And to me, yeah. So let me get your thoughts on silver and how you think about that compared to gold.
Well, I don't have I personally have a large position in gold, but I have a much smaller position in silver. I actually have more physical silver. Silver, I don't know why it's been lagging so much. That's a question I get from a lot of people, why it's been lagging so much. It's showing signs of life right now. It broke above 25 for the first time in a while. I don't have any explanation. The one thing I will say about silver is a great asset to have in your portfolio because it has a big fat right tail, right? There are two historical examples of silver exploding higher one in the 70s, one in 2011, where it goes up 250 to 500%. And it's just good to have even a small allocation in your portfolio, like 2, 3, 4, 5% of something that has the ability to explode higher.
Yeah. And circling back to what you said before about the emails and people asking when do we sell gold? It seems to me that the psychology of this, it's a psychology of some, I mean, I'm in gold bug world, so it can be a completely different psychology than the average generalist or retail investor. But that's interesting because it seems to me, and I saw someone tweet this yesterday, a generalist, that the psychology is, oh, this is a great move in gold, but this is like a temporary thing. I mean, stocks are in a secular bull market. Gold's making this huge move. You know, maybe it'll end in a year or so. This is just a temporary thing. I mean, do you think that gold and precious metals are in this new secular bull market that could last many years? Or do you look at it like other people that, well, stocks are in a secular bull, that's going to keep going, and this is just a temporary thing in gold and silver?
I don't know how long in terms of time the bull market is going to last. Like, let's say we have a war either with China or with Russia or in the Middle East or something like that. I think that would increase the magnitude of the rally, but I think it would shorten the duration. I think we would have more of a spike, a very big spike, but I think it would be more of a spike. Absent something like that, absent some exogenous event, I think we're probably in a secular bull market that is going to last for a long time.
Yeah, you're speaking about precious metals there, just to confirm.
Yeah.
And so doesn't that mean at some point the secular bull in the stock market, I mean, this great move that we have since 2009, I mean, doesn't that mean it's going to come to an end at some point? Because, I mean, I've seen lots of charts and people saying this thing could last another, 7, 8 years. But, you know, when you have gold breaking out and moving like the way it's doing, that's not good for the stock market long term.
Probably not. I mean, if you look at charts of, if you look at like a ratio of S&P to gold and you chart that, that's making lower highs and lower lows. You know, so really what you're talking about is the Dow gold ratio or however you want to measure it. But it's probably going to go lower. I mean, look, like even a day like today, we had a pretty severe sell-off yesterday, and the market has retraced back most of the losses. It's just hard being short stocks. Much easier to be long gold than to be short stocks.
Let's talk about the macro economy a little bit. Are there any signals that you're seeing from the action in markets that could tell you anything about the outlook for the stock market over the next year or so?
I mean, look, like if you parse the economic data, there really is not a lot of weakness. I think the one thing that I would look at is credit. I would think if credit spreads start widening meaningfully, that would mean that we're going to be in a bear market. But keep in mind, we just had a bear market in 2022 and it was pretty severe. You know, the market was down 25% from top to bottom. So I just don't know the answer to that question.
No, that's very good. I totally respect that rather than just babbling on, as I often do. That leaves me with a difficult question, finding a follow-up. If you think about the retail investor, the generalist investor, so based on just what you're seeing anecdotally, you're not, maybe they have like a tiny position in gold. Obviously that could tell you there's a lot more room for gold to move, but like when do you think, is there any signal that we could get from, more generalists or retail people buying gold and shunning conventional stocks? Because it just, and I may have asked this earlier, but it just seems like They're like, yeah, I like gold, but you know, the stock market's in a secular bull, so I don't care. I might have a little bit of gold. Like, do you, is there any sense or anything you could say that when that relationship might flip, or when the generalist and fund average fund manager might say, you know, I need to get more into gold here?
You know, it's funny. There was somebody was sending around a 13F from some emerging markets equities fund a couple weeks ago. And this emerging markets equities fund had Nvidia, it had Google, it had Tesla, it had all the Magnificent Seven stocks. And obviously, an EM fund has no business investing in large cap US growth, but it's working. So people do what works. You know what I mean? So this is reflexivity at its core, right? Like, sentiment follows price. We just had a 15 to 20% move higher, and people are asking themselves, should I own gold? You know, well, you should have been asking yourself that 6, 12, 18 months ago, but they weren't. But now they're asking themselves that question, and people are going to get sucked in. It's happening. People are going to get sucked in.
Yes. Is there, I guess you'd be speculating or guessing, but you mentioned 2,500 as a target. Is there can you quantify with a gold price, a level, when do you think those, you know, those with the herd mentality or those, you know, retail generalists, when they might start getting sucked into gold? Like, is it slowly going to happen? Or do you think maybe if gold gets above 2,500, that's when it would start? I mean, any thoughts on when that might happen?
No, I think it's slowly happening as we speak. You know, it's funny, you know, they're talking about gold on CNBC now for the first time in forever, right? So like, that's happening. You know, like I said, it's reflexivity. Like, it's just going to happen over time. You know, it's, and the other thing is that technical analysis becomes less useful when you're breaking out to new all-time highs, because how do you find resistance levels? You know, you're really just guessing. You can do like Fibonacci projections and stuff like that. It's not super useful. So really, you know, I have told people for a long time that I would sell my gold when the government starts making inclinations about balancing the budget. If there was a concerted effort to balance the budget in the US and people started talking about that, you know, that's what would make me sell it. And unlike a lot of people, like, I'm not a gold forever kind of person. I'm not an anything forever kind of person. I think everything is meant to be sold at some point, but we are a long way from that happening.
Yeah, completely agree. You look at, because you talked about the fiscal situation and your brilliant tweet thread, which you tweeted yesterday, or maybe it was the day before. You look at debt to GDP, we're getting really close to that 130% level that Ray Dalio talks about. I think everyone except Japan, once they've got to that level, you know, they've had to print money, or they've basically gone, which I shouldn't say bankrupt, but you know, that's like a real tipping point. So are we, and again, I think we're pretty close to that 130%. So do you think, I mean, the debt monetization, that's one policy to, you know, keep debt to GDP lower, or at least, you know, make it like that, like it did in 1947. What other, because we're not, you know, it's going to be really difficult to balance the budget. What other policies do you think we might pursue to help that happen?
Well, you know, we, you could elect Rand Paul.
or Ron Paul.
Or Ron Paul, yeah. You could elect somebody like that. You know, it's what's interesting is that I remember when I was in fourth grade, we used to do current events in my fourth grade class, and they would bring in these film strips and put them up on the projector. And this was 1984. Okay. And like, whoever made these film strips was like obsessed with the deficit. Reagan was president. We were running a deficit of about 6% of GDP. which was in nominal terms about $180 billion a year. So we had this 6% deficit to GDP, and people were freaking out about the debt. And people continued to have concerns about the debt all the way through Bush and Clinton up until the year 2000, at which point we ran a surplus. And I worked for the government. I was in the Coast Guard. And I can tell you that under the Clinton administration, you know, it was a time of austerity for the government. We were constantly being told to do more with less. And, you know, all you have to do is look at the payroll statistics and see the amount of government employees we're hiring. It's just endless, you know. So we're a long way from that happening. You have to have a complete shift in mentality in the federal government. And I think we're at least 5 years away from that happening. We have to get to a point where we're in a lot of pain before we start making those decisions.
Right, because I mean, we can't do that now because people have just become way too reliant on government at transfer payments and all that. Like it would just be way too much pain. So I guess I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're saying inflation, stagflation, you know, gold price running away to the upside. I mean, that's probably a precursor to something actually being done.
Yep.
Okay. So do you have any, I mean, if we're in a new secular bull for precious metals, as you said earlier, and again, you know, I guess price targets are more for entertainment purposes than, you know, educational or informational, but I mean, how high could gold go in your mind? I mean, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, is that something you've thought about or just you don't really care for?
Well, no, I have thought about it. And I mean, if we're monetizing the debt, I think it's possible for gold to get close to 10,000. I think it's possible for that to happen. And, you know, and this is not today, not next year, but, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 years from now, I think that could happen. The other thing I'll say is that things in markets take a lot longer to happen than you think. You know, things just take a lot longer to play out. So it wouldn't surprise me if these estimates were a little aggressive. So it could take longer.
Right. They take longer to play out, but then when they start playing out, then they can be more extreme than you thought. Would you?
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you, of course, you know, gold bugs are all precious metals, but if you have this incredible new secular bull market in gold and silver, you know, probably a commodity bull market at the same time, how do you personally, like, how do you think about, you know, the alignment? Are you like, well, I'm only going to put 20% in gold because I still love the stock market and all of that? Or are you thinking, this is a new secular bull, you know, I need to be really heavy into precious metals and commodities? You don't necessarily have to give away your percentages, but maybe you can speak on that, how just the psychology of the average generalist and retail investor, like they're never going to be like 50 or 70% in precious metals.
Well, I personally am at 40%. And, you know, there's two position sizes, too big or too small. So right now, actually, it feels 40% feels like just right to me. I think if I were any bigger, I would be uncomfortable with the risk. I think if I were any smaller, I would feel like I was missing out. So I think for me, 40% of the right number is the right number, and that's going to vary from person to person. So,
do you think we're going to have an easy question, but do you think we're going to have a commodity new secular bull at the same time?
Yeah. And I've been looking at a bunch of stuff. I've been watching copper. I've been watching oil. I've been watching the ags. Obviously I've been watching the softs, with cocoa and orange juice, which have gone parabolic. You know, I just, I, you know, it's for me, it's a matter of bandwidth, and also capital. I would like to go get a shopping cart and buy a bunch of different commodities and build a basket, or even buy a commodity ETF or something like that. Like, that's not a terrible thing to do. But I just, I'm just focusing on gold at the moment. So,
yeah, me too. Now let's get into the work you do. Tell us about the Daily Dirt Nap. And how our listeners and readers, or readers, how our listeners and viewers can read that and subscribe.
So the Daily Dirt Nap is my newsletter that I've been publishing since 2008. So I've been doing it for 16 years. Comes out every single day. I focus on really on sentiment more than anything. I focus on sentiment and psychology. That's kind of my edge. I also do macro stuff too. I cover all asset classes, commodities, currencies, fixed income, equities, do a lot of rates actually. And I do have stock picks in the newsletter. We do have a model portfolio. So yeah, I mean, at this point, the newsletter is an institution. It's been around for 16 years. People love it. You can sign up at dailydirtnap.com.
Okay, and let's talk about your most recent, or your latest book, I should say, No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life. I think I may have said earlier, I mean, precious metals, that'll at least help you in the years ahead. But, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more to the book than that. Can you tell us why you wrote the book and maybe just give us a synopsis and where people can go to buy that?
Well, a lot of the personal finance advice that people have been getting for years is pretty terrible. In my opinion, you know, you go to the bookstore and you see these books which preach extreme solutions, like cut up all your credit cards or never buy coffee or stuff like that. And the thing about extreme solutions is that they're very easy to understand and they're very easy to sell, but they're impractical and they have the effect of increasing people's financial stress. What I really want to do is get people to the point where they experience no financial stress and they don't think about money at all. So the book is divided up into a couple of parts. The beginning is all about attitudes towards money. Then there's a whole section on debt. Then there's a whole section on risk. We have something called the Awesome Portfolio, which is the portfolio that helps you maximize your returns while minimizing your risk. It's very easy to implement. And yeah, the book is available anywhere. It's on Amazon and in stores and it's all over the place. So No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life.
Okay, great. Jared, thank you so much for coming on today. You are a prolific writer and commentator. Love your Twitter. People should follow that. It's very entertaining. Can you give out your Twitter real quickly?
Yeah, the Twitter is @DailyDirtNap.
Yeah, love following you on Twitter. Love your work. Jared, thanks so much for coming on. And hopefully we could do this again later this year and we can see the progression of precious metals.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.